the Class B and C office building market is really facing a lot of challenges today. But the values of those buildings are the same at the same price per square foot that they were 20 or 25 years ago. If you believe the market is going to come back, if you believe in New York, that would seem to be a good investment. I think the land market also significantly below where it could be. The peak of every cycle has greatly exceeded the prior peak.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Bob Knackel has sold over 2,283 buildings, totaling over $21 billion in volume. He's the most, which is the most ever for an individual broker in the history of New York City real estate. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, great to be with you today.
Man, that's a crazy statistic. I'll just say that. 2,283 buildings, as we commented here before the show kicked off. Who's actually keeping track? But that's actually amazing. Bob, there are three questions, however, I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started as a college kid at the Wharton School looking for a summer job that would look good on my resume. Wanted to get into investment banking. Investment banking jobs weren't available for college kids. Ended up walking into a Coldwell Banker office thinking it was a bank. They offered me a job, took it, even though I didn't want to get into real estate. Loved it from day one and went back my next two summers and then started with CB in Manhattan when I got out of school. Met Paul Massey there. He had just gotten out of a training program. We both were starting in sales. Day two on the job, we said, hey, let's work together, see how things go. We'll split everything 50-50. That was the start of a 30-year partnership. And I've been doing it for 40 years in New York now. For 26 of those years, Paul and I had our own company, which we sold in 2014 to Cushman & Wakefield. And I'm the head of New York Private Capital Group at JLL now, running private capital sales in New York.
Wow, that's a colorful career. I mean, there's so many different parts of your story I'd love to dig into. But why do you, let me start here, maybe. Let's start with today. Why do you do what you do today? Like, why are you still so active in real estate? You've got an awesome career behind you. You built a huge company. You've sold it. What keeps you going?
Sam, I love it. It's something that I truly enjoy. You know, I tell folks it's not only a job for me, it's my hobby. I have a wife and a 14-year-old daughter, and they're the most important things in the world to me. But if they were away for the weekend on a girl's weekend, I'd be working all weekend. So I just really enjoy it. And I think that's the thing that keeps driving me. And it, with each each day brings new opportunities to get wins. I'm addicted to winning. And that's one of the things that really drives me.
That's really cool. I love that answer, and good for you. There's very few people, I think, that can say that what they do is both their career and their hobby. So that's really fun. And it shines through, I think, both in your smile when you say, hey, this is what I'm doing and I enjoy it. And this is why I'm doing it. So that's really cool. Good for you. Let's talk a little bit about the company that you sold for, $100 million that you sold your company for.
Yep.
What was that transition like? I mean, you're knee deep into your own business, you sell it. And then what did you transition into?
Well, we sold the business in 2014. We almost sold the business in 2007. For a variety of reasons, we didn't sell it then. We had been offered $50 million in 2007. That deal didn't happen. But what it did teach us was that when we did sell the business, we would be on five-year contracts with whoever bought us. So we actually decided in 2007 that if the market was not really bad in 2014, it would be a great time to think about selling because in 2015, Paul would be turning 55. We thought the perception would be that our contracts would have more value if we were in our 50s than if we were in our 70s or 80s. So we get to 2014, market's chugging along. We hire an investment bank, sell the firm. And in hindsight, it was the absolute perfect time to sell. 2014 was the peak year. Still, historically, 5,534 buildings were sold in New York in 2014. That was an all-time record by more than 10%. That still stands. And it was a perfect time to do it. So we went to Cushman & Wakefield and ran our business as a division of C&W. And then there were some moves that the company made that were not congruent with our contracts. So we shortened our contracts, negotiated some other things. And, you know, I left in 2018 to go to JLL with 53 people that had been with me at Massey Nackel back in the old days. We actually, the company, when we sold it, had over 250 people in four offices in New York. And, you know, I took 53 of those people with me when I went over to JLL.
Wow. That's really a wild story. And you're to this day still with JLL.
Yes. Been What's in JLL it like? Over 5 years now, which I can't believe.
Right. It happens fast. What's it like now being housed under JLL versus running your own shop? And what are some things that you like? And maybe, you know, just some things maybe that if you had gone back in time that you would reconsider.
Yeah. Well, Sam, I think you always look at the difference between having your own shop and working somewhere else, working at a small company, a medium-sized company, a big company. And I tell people there are pros and cons to everything. You know, clearly, if you're running your own shop, you call the shots. There's a lot of freedom associated with that. But then if you're at a big company, you're one of 102,000 people, and there's somebody who's an expert at everything right. within that platform. So you have tremendous resources available to you. And at the end of the day, it's all about helping our clients achieve the best results that they can achieve. And when you have all those resources behind you, it just puts you in a different position to create more value for those folks.
I would imagine, and that's great. Thank you for clarifying that. That's super helpful. Because and I know there's people out here listening to this wondering, do I start my own shop? Do I go work for somebody else, such as JLL or any of the other big name shops? But I guess at this point in your career, you can pick who you want to work with. I would imagine as a client as well, because I'm sure that you are well sought out as a broker there in New York City. So what's an ideal client or an ideal product type maybe that you're working on right now that is exciting for you?
Yeah, well, I've been a generalist selling all kinds of properties my entire career. I think now I'm dovetailing more into doing land sales and multifamily. A lot of the office and retail stuff that we're that has come my way, we have actually gone on and handed that off to other folks in the office that have that as a specialty. But, you know, we've seen that that by specializing in one particular type of property, it allows you to leverage your time a little more. And that's always a positive thing, because as a broker, you have two main assets. You have your knowledge and your time. You're always trying to increase your knowledge base. And you have to use your time as efficiently and effectively as you possibly can, because they don't make any more of it.
That they don't. Well, let's talk about that. Land and multifamily. What does that look like in New York City right now?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, that there's not a lot of rolling pastures available in New York City. So most of our land deals consist of acquiring small buildings, demolishing them to create a pad on which to build a new building. And so land really consists of taking older buildings that are not in good condition, knocking them down, and creating a development site on which a new building can be built.
Is that slowing down with the rise in interest rates? Are there any headwinds that are being faced in that particular strategy?
Yeah, well, you know, everything has slowed down. If you look at where the market is in terms of number of buildings sold, the market is down about 34% from where it was last year, and down almost 70% from where it was at the peak of the market. So clearly things have slowed down. But interestingly, in this downturn, every product type, meaning multifamily, office, land, retail, hotel, every product type is performing differently based upon dynamics that are going on with respect to that particular sector. So it's a very, very different downturn relative to the past four big ones that we've had. You just have to look for opportunity, keep doing the fundamental things. I always tell people brokerage is a very simple business. It's just very difficult. And you have to do those very simple, mundane things over and over again, day after day, week after week, month after month. And then you eventually get to your objective.
When you say that this downturn is different, in what ways?
Oh, well, it's different. Number one, lender behavior. In the past corrections, I'll go back to the savings and loan crisis in the early 90s. Lenders went through a 2 or 3 year foreclosure process, took title to the property, and then hired brokers to sell it. In the early 2000s, and again during the GFC, lenders didn't want to go through that process, so they would just sell the debt, hired brokers to do that. This time around, they've been a little more covert about the way they're dealing with their issues. Mainly, I think, you know, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank going down created a lot of concern in the marketplace about what their books look like for existing banks. So, you know, they'd be playing everything very close to the vest today. But if banks or any type of lender has been active making loans in the past 5 years, they have problems on their balance sheet. There's no way you cannot have problems on your balance sheet if you were lending in the last 5 years. And they just, you know, are trying to do it in as covert a way as possible so far. That may change as we get further into this, but so far lenders have been behaving differently than they have in the past. And then the fact that in the past corrections we've had, every product type was heading downward just to varying degrees. This time, each segment, as I said, is operating and performing kind of autonomously. You look at the retail sector, for instance. I believe the retail sector is on the upswing in New York today because rents have stopped going down. Rents have been on the downward path for over 6 years now, but they've stopped going down. Leasing activity is picking up, and investor demand is coming back for retail. Now, clearly, cap rates are up across the board because lending rates are up, but each of the different product sectors is performing differently. That's the other big difference between this correction and past corrections.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one, I think, to discern, you know, where is opportunity? I mean, that's what a lot of people, I think, are thinking about. Okay, well, and we're seeing people pivot out of one thing into the next. You know, maybe they were all into multifamily and maybe they're going into retail, as you're suggesting, or anything else. But I think that's one of the questions I have for you is, like, what do you see as the best opportunity right now?
Yeah, I think it really depends. You know, I think that if you look at certain asset classes, like the Class B and C office building market is really facing a lot of challenges today. But the values of those buildings are the same at the same price per square foot that they were 20 or 25 years ago. If you believe the market is going to come back, if you believe in New York, that would seem to be a good investment. I think the land market also significantly below where it could be. The peak of every cycle has greatly exceeded the prior peak. We hit a peak in the beginning of 2022 that was less than 50% of the peak of the cycle before that. So I think there's pent up value in the land market. But I think you have to really be wise about what you're buying, how you're buying it, and really know the market, as is always the case with real estate. You have to know the market. But I do believe there's a lot of opportunity out there today.
There really is. What are people doing with office space? I mean, I've talked to a few other guests here on the show. It's been maybe, probably 3 or 4 months since we've talked about New York City office space. But what are people doing with that right now? I mean, what's the play there, if any?
Well, number one thing, and I think it's important to also differentiate between new construction Class A office and everything else. New construction Class A is doing pretty well. The buildings are just incredible in terms of what they offer a tenant. But it's really the secondary and tertiary space that is facing the biggest challenges. Some of it is being converted to residential use. I think the city needs more of that to occur. We could very easily have over 100 million feet of empty office space in New York. And we desperately need housing. So conversion would be a good thing. But we're also seeing values get to the point where the value of the building and the cost to demolish the building together are less than the land value. So a lot of these buildings, I think, will be demolished to make way for new construction. So again, need to know each sector of the market, each neighborhood, figure out what drives each. And, you know, I think there is a lot of opportunity.
That's really, really great. Thank you for taking the time to shed some light on that. Let's talk a little bit about the private capital group that you run. What's the story there? I know private is probably the key word, but what's the story there? And I guess what are people looking for today from an investment perspective?
Well, the private capital group in investment sales, you have institutional work, which is done with the largest corporations in the city, in the country. And then private capital generally describes high net worth individuals and families who are active in the market. That's where I spend the overwhelming majority of my time. And, what people are looking for is a reasonable return in a market that, has dynamics and metrics that are moving in the right direction. So we've seen, our multifamily market has probably seen the biggest change. The apartment building market here is very closely correlated to public policy. We have rent regulation here, rent stabilization and rent control. And those policies have shifted so far against owners' interests that a lot of the old line New York investors that for decades only bought here are now buying in Florida and Texas and Tennessee. And they won't touch anything in New York anymore. And consequently, that has driven cap rates down around the country, and folks are selling buildings in those areas and coming here to buy in New York, because for the first time ever, cap rates are actually higher in New York than they are around the rest of the country in the apartment building sector. So really interesting to see how the market ebbs and flows and what folks are looking for. But, people are always looking for something that will provide a good return with relatively low risk. And there are still some folks that are willing to take big risks with opportunistic type of investments. But for the most part, folks are looking for something that can provide a stable return.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. Talking about things that you're just watching kind of the path of the money. Like you're saying, the money leaves, it goes to the South, it's heading to Texas, Florida, places where they can get a better return. And as it leaves, then cap rates in New York City then start to climb. So the money comes back to New York City and just kind of makes that circuitous route of travel there, where the investment gets the best return. As you're mentioning, a place that you're getting a personal return is social media, which I think you mentioned was something that you never thought you would be involved in.
Yeah, I'm kind of old school when it comes to technology, and social media fell into that basket. A bunch of folks are saying, hey, Bob, you really should get on. You have great stories to tell. You've been around for a long time, and you can make great connections through social media. So in January, I said, I'll give it a try for 3 months, see how it goes. I've been really shocked at the reach that it has, the opportunities that it's presented, the folks that I've met, relationships that I have now. And it's really been eye-opening. But, definitely technology has made the world a lot smaller. It's been really eye-opening to see what social media affords people.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those things that and you have more years in the industry than I do, but it's something, it's a discipline, I think, for some of us, myself included, where it's like, well, I don't really necessarily love being on social media, but it's something that need to invest in and need to keep engaging with. So that's really interesting. If you were to rewind your career, go back, what was it, 40 years maybe?
Yep.
What's one piece of advice you would give to yourself starting out if you could go back and say, hey, Bob, 40 years ago, this is something you should know?
Yeah, well, number one, Sam, we did everything by trial and error in the early years, and so consequently made thousands of mistakes. Didn't make a lot of them twice, which was good, but I wish that we had reached out and asked more experienced people for input on things before we dove in head first. You know, in later years, we had an advisory board, some of the top folks in our industry and in business that really provided great insight for us and, you know, helped us steer the ship of the company in a very meaningful way. And I wish we had done that. And I also wish that we had hired folks to help us do things earlier. You know, it seemed like every time we hired a new position, whether it was someone to be the COO of the company or someone to be the CFO of the company or a director of HR or, you know, someone that took one of the main responsibilities off of Paul and my shoulders, we seemed to get a big bump from doing that. And I think we probably waited a little bit too long to bring on that additional help, but that was a regret as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And that's something that like an email came to me this morning with that same kind of idea in there that obviously the one thing that you can't get back is your time, or that your time is one of the most precious things you have. And I think that's a challenge many of us face, is knowing when to bring the right people on and when to, you know, get out of your own way, if you will. So that's not.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Dr. Benjamin Hardy. He's written a couple of great books with Dan Sullivan. 10X is easier than 2X is a recent one where, you know, he says, just look at what you do all day long and you probably make the overwhelming majority of your money from 20% of the stuff you do. Do as much as you can of that 20%, the other 80% either delegate it to somebody else or don't do it. And then another one of his books is Who Not How,
right?
That whenever you ask yourself, you know, how am I going to get this done? You're asking yourself the wrong question. It's who can get this done for me? And so I think I wish I had those two books available to me way back when we started out, because I think it would have helped a lot. But, you know, never too late to pick up new things.
Absolutely not. Bob, thank you for taking the time here to come on the show today. This was a lot of fun having you on. You've got a wealth of experience to share with us. We've talked about a whole variety of things here on the show today, both from your views on the market to your private capital group to what it was like to build and then sell your own company and then go to work for JLL. And just, yeah, this was a pleasure to have you on the show today. I certainly appreciate it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, best way to get me is you can email me at bob.knackle@jll.com. Knackle is K-N-A-K-A-L. So bob.knackle@jll.com. Or you can find me on social media. I don't know what my particular handles are, but, you know, I'm on just about every platform. Just put in Bob Knackle. You should be able to track me down.
Absolutely, Bob. And I do have your social media handles. We'll make sure we include those there in the show notes. If you're looking for Bob's social media handles, we'll have those there. And again, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I certainly appreciate it.
You got it, Sam. It was great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.